can hear me. So I come from quite a large second generation Polish background, a Polish family, so this piece was inspired by them. They're sometimes weird, sometimes wonderful, sometimes a weird mix of both. Short disclaimer, I do need to do an accent in this piece, so I sincerely apologise to anyone who is Polish or if you know anyone Polish, because it does still need a little bit of work. I sit next to my mother and stare at the TV, seeing but not watching the couple waltz across the screen. They spin across the parquet floor like a coin flicked across a table, revolving heads and tails. "What will my friends think?" my mother says. "It is not a question." "That's your main concern?" I ask. "I am not your age, Anya. I do not have time to make new friends. You know how they are. You need to be tolerant." The word spits across the living room and slides down the mirror above the mantelpiece. I look at the light bulb and beg it to illuminate. From the side table, John Paul II peers at me from a postcard, sandwiched between my parents' wedding day and my first Holy Communion. I stand a rigid white beacon, straight hair curled up under a veil, a holy trinity of obedience, piety, and hairspray. Even then I thought it was lame. "You want me to be tolerant of your homophobic friends," I clarify. "Yes," my mother snaps. "I don't want them to have ammunition against me." "Ammunition?" I picture my Auntie Basha with war paint on her cheeks, crouching in the hydrangeas, lobbing a grenade into the conservatory. "You have friends in high places, JP," I think. "What do they make of this?" Turning towards my mum, I see a small woman, younger than her words, sunken into the faded leather armchair in which she always sits, slippered feet resting majestically on a grumpy footstool. Her stained mug of tea sits in its usual spot, patiently waiting for the next audible slurp. In her bloodshot eyes, I catch glimpses of the shiny couple, spinning, spinning, spinning. "You always want to eat your cake and have it," she says. I laugh, but resist the urge to point. The laugh falls flat. We stare at the TV, and the silence is even louder than before, 2 days ago when it bellowed down the handset as the words, "It's a she," hung suspended between us. "Why you keep using the word they?" Mum had asked. "Why don't you just say he?" And I'd waited, breath held, before blurting it out. My mind drowned in the sound of my own voice, chastising my brain for trying to wrap an S before a he in a third-person plural and bury it under 45 years of broken English, for thinking that surely, surely years of habit would hide a singular female in the crowd. I blamed my libido for getting me here and my larynx for letting it slip, because none of this, none of it needed to have happened. "Are you okay?" I'd asked. "I don't know. I need to sleep on it," Mum had said. I wasn't convinced that a pillow full of my sexual perversions would give my mother any comfort, so I told her, "It's still early days. It might still all fall apart, and you might still end up with grandkids, you know, the normal way." The phone seemed to fall out of my fingers then, dropping to the bed heavy like the weight of my own repression being stuffed back down my throat, hitting the base of my stomach, and wrapping nausea up into an S shape around my gullet. Because why in God's name would I even say any of that? A new couple quickstep across the screen and smile radiance into the gloom. He leads, she follows. Her white skirt flutters, his black shirt glimmers. He turns her and she spins. I wish they would trip. I lace my fingers together and rub one thumb over the other. "You're not too old for thumb rings," Mum said last time I came here. "I'm not too old for you to tell me what to wear," I replied. I take off a ring and flick it across the coffee table, imagining it's the couple, Lego arms locked together, whirring uncontrollably, faces agasp into a sphere, no heads, no tails, just hollow, clicking off a vase and falling off the edge into carpet oblivion. My mother takes her stained mug to the kitchen. "I'm thinking of going back to Poland," she says, hands in the sink. "What? Why? You don't know anyone there anymore." "Eh," she shrugs. "Life's cheaper there." She rinses the mug, turns off the tap, and puts the mug out to dry with the other stained English sundries. The coffee table blurs before me. The artificial flowers start to spin in Mum's 50th birthday vase until the bright colours turn to mush. "Did you ever consider how your actions would ruin my life?" It's my mother's voice, but I can't see her. Can't find the woman my friends used to call the coolest mom. The couple stop dancing and give a bow to wild applause. Bright roses fall at their feet, red and white. We talk tomorrow, she says, turns off the TV and walks upstairs. I pick my ring up off the carpet and wipe tolerance off the mirror. There's no need to turn out the light. I crouch over the sideboard and spin the ring again till it dances, clicking off the Pope towards Grandma, Grandma to Mum, Mum to me, veiled aged 7. I need a restaurant recommendation. Somewhere central and not seafood, I ask. Oh, I see, says the Pope. Who's the lucky guy? I catch the ring and look from the Pope to Grandpa, from Grandpa to Dad, from Dad to Mum, from Mum to me and ask, did you ever consider how your actions would ruin my life?